apprentices a voice and a vote at union meetings. It only applies to fourth and fifth year apprentices, but this is progressive. This is a step in the right direction. When I served my apprenticeship, we couldn't talk. We couldn't vote.
Yeah, at least it's going in the right direction. Hopefully soon enough, it'll be, you know, first and second year apprentices as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's coming, you know, and some people are like, well, they don't know anything. They don't know yet, but they pay dues. They pay an initiation fee. And, you know, I think it comes back to taxation without representation.
Exactly.
We became a country for that reason.
Yeah, we went to war over almost less than that, you know?
Right. You know, and I get it. Some of them, you know, don't really, they're still trying to get their feet wet and learn what's going on. But it's the same thing with an 18-year-old person. You know, they're fresh and new in life, and they get it's democracy. It's the beauty of it. They get a say in who their elected leaders are.
Yeah, it's messy, but that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, that's the way that it works.
Yes, indeed.
More Trans-Pacific Partnership news. It seems like this thing just won't die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we've heard the last of this yet.
No, and every time they put it to rest, or it seems to be, this thing wakes up and it's cranky, and it wants to come back. And now I've read that all countries now that are part of this have signed it. It's going to have to go to votes. We'll have to our Congress will have to ratify this. Obviously, it's what Mr. Obama wants, but I don't understand why.
Yeah, it makes very little sense if you think about it from a rhetorical standpoint. I mean, it seems like for the most part he speaks out in favor of workers. He speaks out in favor of climate change, action on climate change,
right?
And making sure that workers around the world are lifted up. And yet, what the TPP is going to do is pretty much the exact opposite of that,
right,
of what he said.
You know, they got an event coming up. This is the Rock Against the TPP. That's this Saturday night. I wish you could be there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I will not be able to be there, but I hope that everyone out there will go.
This is going to be 5 p.m. at Director Park. This is 815 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. They're going to have some music, and we're going to talk about the TPP. In fact, we're going to rock against the TPP.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nationwide uprising to sound the alarm against the biggest corporate power grab in history.
NAFTA Trans-Pacific Partnership.
It is. It's NAFTA on steroids. There's some free tickets. You can text Portland to 503-543-1452. Also, if you're unable to make it to that, but you're interested in more information about it, there's going to be TPP 101 hosted by Evangeline Lilly on Sunday, August 21st at 1 p.m. This will be at the First Unitarian Church at 1226 Southwest Salmon Street. Come get educated. Find out why this thing is terrible. Here, I got a little cheat sheet right there. Tell us some of the stuff that you should be concerned of. I'm pretty sure everybody's going to fall into one of these categories.
Yeah, I mean, so if in fact you are a worker, if you work for a living, which most of us do, then essentially this is going to attack your wages, because what it does is companies that operate around the world, they'll be able to move their manufacturing to the lowest paid employees. So mm-hmm. you will be up against workers in say Malaysia or other countries where they
right.
do not have to pay their employees anywhere near what we have to pay.
Right.
So even though it says in the writing of it that it's going to put in place minimum wage standards, what that really means is it's going to lower our minimum wage standard against
right.
that of countries that are less industrialized than ours.
The language that they have in there for that does not specify what the minimum wage has to be. It
right.
just specifies that they must have a minimum wage. So that could be like one copper coin or whatever the lowest. I have no idea what the lowest currency is in the history of currency.
But as long as you get one of that.
A farthing. As long as you get a farthing for an hour of wages, you meet the requirements of
one
that law.
One shilling, yeah.
A shilling. I don't think I can compete against it. I don't think I can feed my family on a shilling. You know what I mean?
Especially because I don't know what the conversion rate is on that, you know?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, on top of that, I mean, if you are, if you're a worker, it's not going to be great for you. If you are in favor of clean air and living on this planet, for generations to come,
right.
it's also not going to be great for that, because what it does is essentially, if a country has, or a city or a state has protections in place that are environmental protections that hinder a company's ability to to get the maximum profit out of operating in that environment, then they can essentially, that corporation can then sue the governmental body that put in place those environmental protections for the loss of profits that they, or the projected profits that they would have made had that not been in place.
And that's even more terrifying than it sounds, because not only can they sue you for lost profits, it's lost from their projected profits.
Right, which is, you know, you can project anything you want.
Oh, yeah. We, you know what? We were definitely going to make a gazillion dollars this year until you implemented the rule that we couldn't dump our garbage in your drinking water.
Yeah, and now, therefore, you owe us a gazillion dollars.
You owe us a gazillion, because nobody wants to drink our water. That's weird.
Exactly. And then, you know, if you are, say, a consumer, which most of us are, if you buy products, if you eat food, you know, it's going to affect you as well, because it's going to essentially, if you have in place protections for food regulation, say, you know, GMO standards or certain, you know, quality standards for how the food is raised, right, or produced. Again, it's going to be similar to how that works for workers, is that if a country that the company can produce in has lower standards than what your country has, then they can essentially sue you for that same right to lower the rates, or to lower the protections on that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, and like, you know, I buy most of my stuff from the grocery store. You know, like, people at work want to ask me, like, you know, where do you do your hunting? Where do you fishing? You know, what are your secret spots? And I'm like, Costco?
Going.
But I catch something. I catch something every time I go. You know,
Costco fishing. But I
like that I'm able to look at the package and see that my product is from America. I know there's regulations here. If they do away with that, you know, how can I tell that I've got protections on my food?
There won't be country of origin labels. Like, you won't know if your seafood was caught sustainably, you know, in the Northwest, or if it came from some sort of horrible fish farm in,
right,
you know, a foreign country. You're not going to know that. You're not going to know how your cattle was raised. You're not going to know any of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, what about a mad cow country, you know, where they know that there's a problem, an epidemic of mad cow? I don't want to eat a product from that company.
Yeah,
country,
what if you're eating cows that are drinking toxic water in a country that we don't have any knowledge of what the environment is?
Right.
We won't know whether it came from there or whether it came from, you know, some cattle farm in the Willamette Valley.
Oh, it's terrifying. I mean, the more that this kind of stuff happens, it makes me just want to buy a piece of land out in the middle of nowhere and just do everything for myself.
Yeah, and, you know, based on what the climate projections are for this, it may not be too long until we pretty much have to sustain ourselves.
Yeah, no kidding. You're right. Based on the climate, I might have to look really far north.
Yeah, we might have to move north into Canada.
So, you know, I know you can't be there, but I'll be rocking out against the TPP.
Yeah.
And
looks like
hopefully
the headliner's
a bunch of you will
be,
too.
Yeah. We have Anti-Flag headlining the show on Saturday. And then on Sunday, the TPP 101 event is going to be hosted by Evangeline Lilly, which fans of Lost, the show Lost, will know her as Kate from that show.
Did you watch Lost?
I did. I think I watched the first season or two, and
you didn't finish it.
I got kind of lost from it, you know.
Okay, yeah, no, that's probably a good thing. I've never got into the show, and I'm told now that, like, save yourself, don't do it. A lot of people are really upset about the ending.
That's what I've heard from pretty much everyone. Yeah,
you won't get any spoilers from me on this one because I haven't seen it. But that's cool. I'd go there. I'd go there and see what she has to say.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure she's got some interesting points, and I imagine she'll have some good speakers going. But that's going to be Sunday the 21st at 1 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church downtown at 1226 Southwest Salmon Street.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Here's kind of a cool tidbit that I read out of the Labor Press. Hopefully a lot of people out there listening to the show actually subscribe to the Labor Press or work for a place that has it. This kind of stuff just tickles me. Juno, the spacecraft that is now successfully orbiting Jupiter 540 million miles away in space, was built and launched by the Machinists Union members. Uh-huh. IAM Aerospace Workers Local Lodge 44 members who worked at Lockheed Martin in Decatur, Alabama, built it. And IAM Local Lodge 610 members at United Launch Alliance in Cape Canaveral, Florida, launched it.
Heck yeah.
Union, this is Union craftsmanship that is out there orbiting a planet that I can't even see, but I know it's out there. And it's just the success of our civilization.
Yeah, taking American ingenuity into space.
Yeah, Union workers, Union crafted.
No better way.
I hope there's a sticker on there. Brought to you, proudly brought to you by these locals.
I got to imagine there is.
That'd be fantastic.
Every alien planet out there will know.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. They'll come to us to recruit.
Yeah.
Union labor that, or they'll be signing the transgalactic partnership agreement.
That's the next step, I think. Yeah, exactly. We'll be competing against the low-paid Martian workers, you know.
You know, the TPP, I don't even think we covered this. It extends patent protections for pharmaceutical companies. Like, our medicine is not already expensive enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, what is it, 3 years right now that they get medical licensing on for a new patented medicine? I think that's it.
Yeah, it's somewhere around three to four years, I believe.
That might not be exactly correct on it. It was close to 3 years, I read. And this wants to extend it out by a number of years so that they can just get even more profit. And they know that people have to pay, because when they got the only medicine available for this stuff, and your doctor says, without this, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
You sign over your house, your car. I mean, you give up everything.
You do what it takes.
Yeah.
And there are no generics out there, because that's what this protects. It protects the patent.
Yeah. Yeah. It limits the generics from even competing.
Yeah. I mean, it seems kind of insane to have the principles of capitalism placed on the ability for someone to exist and live in this world.
Oh, yeah.
But that's essentially what this does. It means that if you can't afford the price, that the high price that they're putting on it,
there's no
alternative, and you die.
Yep. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about your luck, poor person.
Yeah, too bad you weren't rich.
Yep. I also read that Portland airport retail workers, they have signed a union. They got their first union contract with Unite Here.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Portland airport retail workers. The wages, it doesn't sound like they're getting a very huge jump. They're getting 20 cents above the minimum wage. I don't know what they're making before. Were they making minimum wage before this?
Yeah, I mean, if it's just 20 cents above minimum wage, I got to imagine they weren't making much above minimum wage already.
So. Yeah, that's what I would think, too. But then for leads, it's an additional dollar, an additional $2 for their warehouse workers.
Good.
But hopefully this is a nice bump for them. Their workers will have to pay in only one quarter of the premium for medical insurance that covers 90% of their costs after a small deductible. They'll also be vested in a pension plan after 5 years.
Five years.
I know that's a long time.
Long time to work in an airport retail environment.
No kidding. Salute to you guys and gals out there. I can't imagine 5 years at the airport.
What about vacation time? They get anything like that?
Yeah. Speaking of 5 years, they get 2 weeks of paid vacation after 5 years. this doesn't say anything about vacation time before that, so I'm guessing they don't. However, they do get 6 holidays a year paid.
Good.
And if they work those days, they get double time and a half.
Perfect.
Yeah. I don't even get double time and a half on holidays.
No, that's a pretty impressive amount right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So congratulations to them also. And this is one that's often overlooked about the benefit of a union. It gives them some rights. No discipline without just cause.
Yep.
Right. And so, I mean, you're thinking, okay, well, if I just work hard, they're not going to do something to me for no reason, right? I used to think that way when I was younger.
Young and idealistic,
you know, but you do one thing that they don't like, something rubs them wrong, they'll find a reason maybe to get rid of you.
Yeah.
And this is just a protection on that.
And there's no recourse. If you are a lone employee, there's no recourse to go back. I mean, you can take it to the human resources department, you can take it to your boss, but ultimately, if the company makes a decision, they don't have to reverse that.
That's true.
I think that exact point, I think, encapsulates exactly why, if someone's wondering what the benefits of being in a union are, I think that is exactly it. It's that you have some recourse outside of your direct hierarchy.
Yes.
To challenge something that you don't, an injustice that you see in the workplace.
Right. Yeah. You know, and then so some people think that goes too far. Like, oh, well, you're giving rights to people that don't deserve them. You get through these quote, lazy people that don't want to do anything.
Rights.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy.
They
people don't deserve these rights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That kind of reasoning just drives me bonkers sometimes. But, I mean, we've all got a coworker that we think doesn't pull their fair share. But I was a Teamster throwing boxes overnight at UPS. And I'll tell you, everybody there worked pretty freaking hard. And to overcome that, they just set a very specific minimum standard. You must load this many boxes per hour. You must have less than this number of misloads, right? So, like, if you're expecting your package to be delivered on a certain date and you check it, and you know, and it's in Salem, and you check tomorrow and it's back in Sacramento, and you're like scratching your head, like, where's my package?
Yeah.
That's because somebody probably accidentally loaded that onto the wrong truck. And there, you know, there's discipline for that.
Right.
You have to receive, you know, there's a threshold. You can have, but it's going to happen to everybody.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah. So, you know, but I like that part of it, that their discipline must be very specific. It can't just be like, well, you're the worst package handler that ever existed in the history of package handling. You're
no facts
here,
involved.
Yeah, with no facts. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, and if you think that nobody's ever going to punish you if you just show up and work hard, I think there's merit to the fact that you should show up and work hard. And my union, from day one, they teach us a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. And so you're supposed to show up and you're supposed to give everything, you know, that you have. You're supposed to work 100%.
Yeah. And if you're concerned that, you know, you have employees or you have coworkers around you who you don't think necessarily work as hard as you, and therefore you think that maybe they don't deserve that equal protection. I mean,
right.
As long as you show up and do your job
right.
and put in the honest day's work that you know that you have to do, it shouldn't be about whether people around you are working as hard, but rather how far can you get for yourself moving forward,
right.
working hard like that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to take rights away and protections away from other people in
sure.
order for you to incentivize working harder.
Right, I think so too. You know, and if you see that a coworker is struggling, you can offer some help, you know, or maybe they snub you for offering some help. That happens sometimes, but then you look at yourself and you say, well, I'm getting paid the amount that my union negotiated for, and I'm going to give my best back in return for it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can go home and have a good night's sleep with a clean conscience.
That's how that works.
But it doesn't always happen that way. And in the case of the Portland retail workers, they terminated 4 union supporters when they were trying to unionize. And at the end of this, the National Labor Relations Board determined that the terminations actually violated federal labor law. They decided that the retail outfits actually fired them for trying to unionize.
Not a surprise.
Well, right. Yeah. And the company, of course, is like, no, these were just layoffs. You know, we were just slow.
Just routine layoffs.
But the records indicated that the companies were actually hiring new people at the same time. So it's reasonable to assume you laid them off for another reason than things are getting slow. You wanted to replace them. And this seems like a reasonable course.
Yeah, I'm sure looking into that, the 4 employees that were let go were likely people who were pushing pretty hard for the union.
They were, yeah. Mm-hmm. This article states that.
Yep.
And in fact, they were reinstated to their jobs and received full back pay.
That's what I'm talking about.
So congratulations to them, and thank you to the National Labor Relations Board. It's good when these bureaucrats actually do something for us, because so often they seem ambivalent. And sometimes even harmful to us.
Yeah, it's a rare victory, but it's great when things go the way for workers, you know?
I think so.
Me too.
So what else is new? Anything exciting in your end of the world?
You know, I've actually, full disclosure, I work in the cannabis industry, and that's an industry that at this point right now does not have too much by way of labor representation. There's sort of an abundance of labor and a shortage of jobs, so it's certainly an area that's ripe for unionization, but I think it's going to be slow going just based on the fact that everyone and their mom wants to work in our industry right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's besides the fact that we're making crazy amounts in tax revenue, we're also, you know, there's more jobs opening up every day, and it's an industry that people seem to gravitate towards mostly because they enjoy the product that's being sold, and therefore they want to work in that environment. So I would say that, you know, for people interested in working in this environment, just be wary that it's not necessarily, you know, and this is different company to company, but it's not the most worker favorable industry at the moment.
That'd be great if that unionized. I mean, there's got to be a union out there that's listening to this right now. There's probably people out there already trying to organize.
Oh yeah, there's a cannabis workers union that's working on doing that here in Oregon, and they can definitely use all the help that they can get.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I just read an article today, or actually my coworker read an article to me that Colorado is making immense amounts of revenue off marijuana tax.
Oh, yeah.
Something like $70 million in a year. And they said it was something like 60 years worth of funding for reduced and free lunch programs for the kids.
Look at that. Cannabis doing something good for kids.
Yeah, no kidding. What a shock. Who knows if they'll actually use it for that, but that amount of money, they're like, we could fund this for pretty
theoretically,
much,
you
know, yeah, for the rest of these kids' lives.
Yeah, I know that the projection is that by the end of the year, Oregon is supposed to have made something like $46 million in tax revenue, and that'll likely go up, you know, as more and more sales go on, you know,
right,
as the year goes on and as more and more people get into it. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at the states that have legalized this and that are making, you know, money hand over fist and object to it in any standpoint besides an ideological standpoint. And at this point, the ideological standpoint is really thin. So
right,
I think we have in the upcoming election in November, there are five states that at this point have some form of recreational cannabis legalization measure on the ballot for voters to vote for.
Well, yeah.
And if we get, you know, if one of them is California, that's, you know, if the most populous state in the union is to vote for it, all of a sudden you have, you know, the rest of the states vote for it. All of a sudden you have a quarter of the country living under a different set of regulations about cannabis than the rest of the country.
Right.
And I think that has to be a tide turning moment for the movement.
You know, I just can't fathom why they would keep it illegal. Like, as a taxpayer, you know, they're taking my money and incarcerating people for using, you know, a plant byproduct.
A natural thing, something that grows naturally in the ground that was here before humans, that exists whether or not humans are here and will be here long after us.
Yeah.
It's strange to regulate nature in that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's pretty telling that we, you know, everyone knows about the WikiLeaks dump that happened a couple of weeks ago, right before the Democratic convention.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of discussion about how the DNC had pulled for Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. But something that didn't get as much coverage in involved in those emails was the overwhelming funding and negative advertising put in by the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America, the industry group for alcohol. Basically saying, you know, convincing lawmakers, particularly in the Democratic Party, not to stand for cannabis legalization, saying things like, oh, you know, stoned driving has gone up, you know, this much in the states that have legalized it, and the use among young adults and this and that have gone up, but completely skirting the fact that they are representing alcohol, which is far more dangerous, whether we're talking about drunk driving incidences or simple health incidences, than cannabis has proven to be at all at this point. But, you know, so it seems to be that if you are against the legalization at this point, you are either holding some deep-seated moral, you know, misguided, but still, you know, possibly higher calling, you know, a moral judgment on it, or you are in the pocket of big pharma or big alcohol.
I would
imagine.
Yeah. Huh. So what kind of struggles do you think are being faced by cannabis workers? Like what would a union do to help? Actually, you know what, before we even get to that.
Yeah.
What are cannabis workers? I imagine this is a broad categorization. You got to have people that are farming, people that are selling, people that are transporting, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it is a full and growing industry at this point. I mean, you have every type of worker working in this industry, whether that's, you know, I mean, the basic retail worker in the dispensaries, you know, down to the farm workers, you know, just farm laborers, and all that. I mean, there are farms all over the state producing cannabis that's being consumed all over, and those farms need all the work that would be done by, you know, the same type of worker on a, you know, on a farm that would be producing corn or grapes or something like that. So there's just, agriculture workers, there's retail workers, there are ancillary businesses, you know, producing products, you know, the water pipes and glass pieces and this and that. There's people who are, you know, there's scientists involved in all the testing labs that exist out there, and there's advertising professionals working on this and that, and there's you know, MBAs getting involved and starting their own cannabis companies. And so there's pretty much any skill that you have, any type of job experience you have can apply to this industry. So it is definitely a in the state of Oregon that is, you know, certainly lacking a lot of major industry. It's a huge booster to our economy.
So now it's still federally illegal, right? There's still a Schedule One narcotic. Is that the term?
Yeah, and in fact, the just this week, the or actually, I suppose the end of last week, but still, the DEA, based on the recommendation of the FDA, determined that cannabis still has they can't find any medical value to it, and therefore it is remaining as a Schedule One drug, which is the most, you know, what determined by the government, the most dangerous and unuseful drugs, and it's in that same category with heroin and lysergic acid, LSD, you know.
Yeah. Stuff that isn't natural, stuff that's being chemically made for, you know, to get people addicted to, for whatever reason.
It's the only naturally occurring plant that exists in that category of scary drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and just for context, methamphetamines are Schedule Two because they have some medical value.
No way.
You know, yeah. So that it's confusing. It makes very little sense if you think about it from a logic standpoint. But if you think about it from a corruption standpoint, if you think about it from who likely funds or you know, has large influence and pull over the FDA, and the DEA. I mean, the FDA, it's largely in the pocket of big pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
DEA is largely in the pocket of law enforcement lobbies. So, you know, both of which the pharmaceutical industry benefits when people have to pay high premiums for synthetic drugs that they create versus being able to grow something on their own that provides the same pain relieving benefits, same, you know, mind altering benefits and mood altering benefits. If they can grow that on their own,
right, the
pharmaceutical industry loses a lot of money.
That's true.
And conversely, if cannabis is legalized, all of a sudden the funding that's going to all these small town police departments and, you know, to fight the war on drugs stops coming in because it's unnecessary. And therefore, those are two major opponents of this, of the legalization movement.
That's just sad.
It is.
And, you know, going back to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's just a huge corporate power. It's more than a grab. It's I don't know.
It's the final blow, essentially. I mean, that's what it's seeming to be, at least.
They want to control everything and everyone. It doesn't seem like they're going to be happy.
It's the new world order.
So it's pretty scary.
It is.
Yeah, so, okay, so now that we know who they are, now we know who's working in the industry, like, what issues are people being faced with? Tell me about the banking. Is it still mostly a cash business?
Yeah, I mean, so just from a physical safety standpoint, it's a pretty scary environment to be in because, I mean, just last week, there was an armed robbery at a dispensary out in southeast Portland where the robbers came in, you know, armed and were able to go in and grab product and money.
Wow.
You know, if you've ever been to a place like California, you see medical dispensaries that exist and they have armed guards standing out front. But in Oregon, we don't really have that. That's not really part of the culture here.
No.
But because of the fact that based on, you know, the recommendation from the federal government, the FDIC has put just huge, really high hurdles for banks to be able to deal with us. They lose, you know, we're essentially considered drug cartels. And so, you know, despite the fact that, you know, HSBC got caught laundering money for drug cartels and nothing really happened to them, the reality is that banks are prohibited from dealing with cartels. And so since we fall into that category, in order to deal with us, they have to take on a lot of insurance risks. So they just simply aren't willing to do that. So we aren't able to access bank accounts. And therefore, that means that we deal largely in cash. So if you think about not to give people a bad idea out there, but, you know, you look at a dispensary and you have product that can be easily resold on the black market and you have large amounts of cash and you don't have any security guards. It's a scary environment.
That's terrifying, yeah.
I mean, you know, versus...
It makes you a target.
Right. Versus something like alcohol that is fully federally legal and means that there is no black market for it because it is fully available and those liquor stores are able to accept credit cards. That means that there's no incentive for someone to knock over a liquor store unless they want to grab, you know, one bottle for themselves, but there's no resale value to it. Whereas what we have is there's still a black market all around the world for what we're making.
Right.
And the federal government does not provide us with the security of being able to run cashless transactions.
Is there some concern that we'll get a new president this term who, instead of taking a policy of non-enforcement on a federal narcotic Schedule 1 classification, that the new president could crack down and say, you know what, enough's enough. We don't recognize state legalization, but we're going to crack down on everybody, not only that is participating, that has participated.
Yeah, there's definitely a buzz around the industry right now. I mean, if you look at the two candidates who are, you know, likely who are the nominees for the two major parties, you have Hillary Clinton, who has essentially said that she is going to take the same approach that the Obama administration has taken, which is sort of a hands-off, wait-and-see type event approach, which doesn't really do much for us. It doesn't move the needle. It doesn't, you know, as much as it's not harming us necessarily, it's also not helping. And by not helping, it's essentially harming.
Yeah, and when you leave somebody in a gray area like that, it's scary too. Like you don't feel secure. Feel there's not security. You know?
You don't feel like we're being supported. And then on the other side of it, you have, you know, the Trump-Pence ticket, who they've essentially said that they will come out and treat us like felons. And so there is, you know, I mean, if you listen to the things that Mike Pence has said in the past, we are all the devil, and therefore, you know, that hasn't been specifically said, but I got to imagine that if they are elected, if that ticket is elected, we will see the kind of raids that are happening in places like California and in Canada, happening all over all the legal states in this country.
You know, I got to tell you, because they all have their all these elected officials have their lobbyists, and there's just a part of me that always wonders, like, you know what? I wonder if they're pushing so hard for the TPP as sort of like a negotiating. Like, I'll tell you what, we're not going to enforce marijuana, you know, big farm like you want us to, but we're going to pass these new patent protections for you, so your profit's going to be as high as ever.
Right, as a sort of a consolation prize. Like, hey, we're going to hurt your business a little bit.
On one end, but we're going to make it way better for you on the other end. I think that stuff like that happens, you know. I would not be surprised anyways if I found
out. It's essentially like what the FCC did with the telecom industry, where they said, all right, hey, if you work with us and allow us to spy, we will provide you with
immunity.
The net neutrality. You know,
right. That too. Yeah.
Get that was the same argument that happened there.
Yep. All right. Well, it's 6:30. Can you believe that we even started a little early tonight?
Imagine? Amazing. We just blew through that.
Well,
every time.
Thanks everyone for listening. Remember, if you're out there, come rock against the TPP this Saturday night. And if you're not in a union, think about joining one. Keep up the good fight. Keep working hard. And we'll see you next week.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.